Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. Today, we are joined by Marty Smith, published author, TBRI specialist, and occupational therapist. Join us today as we discuss calming through chaos, leaning into the principles of TBRI teaching to support children and caregivers through their sensory systems. This podcast today is packed full of incredible information, so buckle up. This is Marty.
Well, hey, Julie, it is so good to be on Wonders and Worries with you. I'm so glad that you contacted me to talk about my favorite thing. For those of your listeners that don't know me, my name is Marty Smith, and I am an occupational therapist, and I have been specializing in both autism and children who have experienced trauma since probably 2008. Dr. Bruce Perry is a traumatologist, and he contacted me to help with the neurosequential model of therapeutics that he does, the NMT model. And so he made me a fellow of the Child Trauma Academy, and I worked with his team to train with them and talk about how do you help the kids with the calming systems and how do we bring the occupational therapy lens. He likes to bring in lots of people on his team, and so I was fortunate enough to be one of them. And through that, I met Dr. Purvis and Dr. Cross and started training with the TBRI, which is the Trust-Based Relational Intervention. And so I've been working with TBRI probably since 2012, and I work closely with them on the calming strategies and the empowerment section of their tools. So because of that, telling you earlier, Julie, that Dr. Cross asked me to write The Connected Therapist as part of the Connected Child and the Connected Parent series. I have been studying and training and teaching and living life through the sensory systems since 1996 when I graduated from Indiana University. And that's my passion, is how do we look at the child as a whole, or adults. I work with adults as well. That's something else about me. I work at a care farm, which is exciting, up in Hutto. And I think you've been out to Simple Sparrow, haven't you?
Many times. And I plan to be also inviting my lovely friend there as a guest on our podcast here soon. So,
Good. Yeah. So that's what I do Mondays and Wednesdays. I actually treat out at the farm. I have a little sensory room, a living room that we converted into a sensory gym, which is so exciting for me and for your listeners as well, because I literally work out of a house. So if you're wanting to do something as a carryover, you don't have to have big suspension equipment. You don't have to have, you know, thousands of dollars of hanging swings and things like that. Anyway, kind of what I do, you had asked if there's a quirky thing about me. I have a ton of quirky things. I love to scuba dive. I love to quilt, which is, those don't always go together. And something a lot of people know about me, since I do a lot of trainings, I have been blessed to be able to travel a lot. And sometimes if I go somewhere to give a lecture, I'll take my children. And so just last couple weeks ago this month, we got to Hawaii. I was doing a training in Hawaii for TBRI and took the family. And so not only have I been to all 50 states, I have trained in all 50 states, and my children have set foot and often slept in all 50 states. So that's my big thing, I guess. But I think that's a unique thing about me.
I would love to make that my goal. Your ability to connect with kids, I've gotten to see it firsthand and as a friend, but also just clinically, is just, God, it's amazing. So I'm excited to have you here to discuss all the important things of calming through the chaos. Mm-hmm. I think because our population that we deal with at Wonders and Worries, especially, but to all of our listeners with chronic illness, chaos might be the one word that probably best describes what it's like to live in that environment. Unlike, you know, if you have the flu, or if you maybe break your arm, or even have to have hip replacement surgery, it's a season. It goes away.
Yeah.
We know with chronic illness, we also know for our children born with chronic illness, it's your lifetime. It is, it is for whatever time you have remaining in this world, it is there. And whether it's maybe only a majority of it or a portion of it, even the effects of it ripple through the rest of your life, and it connects with everyone in your family in its own unique ways. So sometimes, despite our very best intentions, and I know we spoke about this before a little bit, previous episodes on WonderCast, we've talked about the importance of having structured routines and building predictability where we can, and having, you know, maybe the control center where we keep kind of all of our lists and our calendars, and maybe we have a family meeting every Sunday night, and that's our, this is our plan for the week at a time. So instead of facing the whole illness, we just take a week at a time. We have all these little tricks to kind of break it up. And sometimes with even our best efforts in that, because our children are small and we know that they do not have fully formed brains yet, and they are still in that system of rapid growth and development, even with all the best efforts in place, they are still going to have moments of extreme dysregulation. And that does not mean that you have failed as a parent or that you have failed them in any way with doing it incorrectly. It just means that they're processing this huge life event in their life in their own way. But you are here today to share some great tools that parents can access through just TBRI programming, kind of some concepts that can help them with re-guiding and getting these kids back on track, but also just tools they can find in their own home, which, like you said, they don't have to have millions of dollars worth of equipment. There are things in their own home that they can utilize to help with their kids, to help them get back online and feel more regulated and move forward into a state of more typical development and calming.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, when you asked me to do this, I was kind of thinking through, you know, the book that I wrote is The Connected Therapist Relating Through the Senses. And the first half of the book is kind of my journey of becoming TBRI practitioner, but also a liver, right? And applying it to my own family. So it was kind of my own journey into the process because it was not natural for me, you know, like giving do-overs and, you know, giving my children voice and things like that. I was like, what? They're supposed to just do what you tell them. It does not work.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of like why that didn't work for me and how I changed things. And then the second book is what I think we could really lean into today. Is I kind of go through all the different senses and talk about how trauma influences the development of those senses, and then also how we can impact them to help the kids. And so maybe we could just go sense by sense, and I could give you some tips of things you could do in the house to, you know, really speak to each of our sensations. And
I love that. Let's do it.
So TBRI is trust-based relational intervention. It's really about having connection, power, connect, correct, where you want to make sure that everybody has felt safety and that their physical needs are met, and that you also have a relationship with them. Because if they don't have felt safety, if their needs are not met and you are not in connection with them, there's no way that you're going to be able to influence them, you know, and they use the term correct, but it's really influence or teach. You know, Dr. Perry uses regulate, relate, and reason. We can't really reason with a person if we haven't regulated their sensory, their body, and their environment. And, you know, we definitely cannot work with someone if we don't have a relationship. And I think that's a part that we're really, all my work in the juvenile justice department and some of the more punitive systems that I'm in, we're really seeing that you've got to have a relationship with these people if you're wanting them to make system-wide changes. And that goes for the caregivers as well as the people that you're caring for. Robin Goebel and I are good friends and colleagues, and she has the mantra that says, regulated, connected kids who feel safe and know what to do behave well. And so if something's happening, somebody's having a meltdown, you know, either they're not regulated, their body systems are out. And I'll even give an example. I think you're open to your listeners and like you tell funny stories and things like
that. Oh, all the time.
But when we started, you were like, oh, there's some laundry near me, you know?
Yes.
This laundry. So I made myself some coffee and I'm going to smell this coffee if that laundry gets to me. And so that's your way to regulate your body, right? Because you could be derailed by the laundry that is sitting next to you. And so as adults, we're able to take a drink. And, you know, as we're sitting in the carpool line, I promise you, everybody that's in the pickup line has a coffee or something that they're drinking through a straw, or they're playing the music that they like, or they're fidgeting with their keys, or they've rolled down the window to get the fresh breeze, or they've turned the heat up. Like, we as adults modify our environments all the time and our sensory experiences so that we can regulate ourselves, so that we can better attend to what we're supposed to do. But with kids, these strategies aren't always readily available to them, you know, and when they do chew on their pencil or when they do need to get up and walk around a little bit, then we're like, sit down, you know, stop chewing on that, you know, stop touching your sister's hair, stop kicking the seat, you know, we're constantly telling them to, you know, kind of turn off their regulatory tools. And so, you know, some of the TBRI is just being aware of these things. And, you know, one of the examples I talk about when we talk about the sensory system is when I'm working with a long-term care facility or a residential facility, and we talk about showers, right? And usually we'll divide the room up and say, okay, who likes to take their shower in the evening? And half the room will walk over there. And then who likes to shower in the morning? The other half will walk over there. And I'll say, okay, so now you're in a residential facility and you've just been told that you can only shower at night. And my morning showers are like, oh my gosh, that would totally mess up my whole day. Like, I need my shower to get me going, right? And so with kids, a lot of it is stepping back and saying, well, are you a morning or an evening showerer? And then helping them, you know, are you I like cold chocolate milk or hot chocolate? Like, what speaks to their sensory system that really helps their nervous system feel ready for whatever's coming? My job is just looking at the environment and saying, how can I facilitate what feels good to this individual nervous system to meet the need in that moment? I don't want kids to be calm all the time. You know, if you give them bad news, I kind of want them to scream and cry and get it out and be mad. I mean, and be frustrated. My goodness, be frustrated, be disappointed, be all of those things. But not lose control of who you are. Robin and I are doing a lot of work together. So, of course, I have a lot of her in my head right now. But she has always said from the beginning, 10 years ago, we were talking about this, and like meet their energy, but not their dysregulation. You know,
I love that.
Yeah.
That's a great concept.
I do too, because when kids come up to you and they're like, ah, I'm really upset. And you're like, oh, that's so disappointing. It's like, no, I'm really upset. And so you have to say, oh my goodness, I'm upset with you. Like, what happened? How can we fix this? You know, like you have to match that energy and or they don't feel seen. And when a child doesn't feel seen, then they continue to find ways to catch your attention until they do feel seen. I would say if we started with the vestibular system, and that is your sense of balance. The receptors are located in the inner ear area, and how you tip your head influences how your brain perceives how gravity is pulling on your body. So it's kind of your balance. It's how you kind of move through life. And so any type of movement, we usually think of as the vestibular sense. Depending on how you stimulate that sense, you can either kind of alert someone or you can calm them. And typically anything that is rhythmic and repetitive is going to be calming. And so, you know, you kind of lean into that rhythm and repetition because, you know, even spinning, if it's rhythmic and repetitive, can be a calming thing to the nervous system. And some kids, they are calmed by that. But most kids, it's going to be kind of a rocking front to back, rocking side to side, even jumping up and down can be very calming as long as it's rhythmic and repetitive. And so you'll see when people get real excited, if they're getting ready to do an athletic event and you see the swimmers, right? And they're jumping up and down and they're moving back and forth. And, you know, that's kind of their way to get their body calmed down and ready because they've got a lot of nervous energy built up because they should, right? They should have that nervous energy. They're getting ready to run a race and they want to be very fast, but they're keeping everything in check by being able to lean into that vestibular sense. And so, you know, even just having a rocking chair, I love for my personal therapeutic space, I love having two rocking chairs together because then I can match the energy without matching the dysregulation. So if my client is rocking really fast, and then it kind of gives me an idea that they're kind of amped up a little bit, you know, they're really, really rocking. And so I can come in and rock right next to them, and then my mirror neurons and their mirror neurons will do a little dance. And then I can begin to co-regulate, and then I can actually slow down my rocking, and then they'll slow down. So even just going for a walk is another great way to kind of get into the vestibular system. So many times, you know, when you're really dysregulated and really upset, just go for a walk with somebody, and you don't have to talk to them because you can just lean into, hey, I don't have to talk to this person because I'm matching them with my vestibular system. We're still communicating through that vestibular sense. And sometimes that's less threatening than being in front of someone or something like that. That can be a very nice calming way, especially for people that want to talk about something. But then if you tell them when they're walking or rocking, then that vestibular system might help you out, you know, in that moment.
That's fascinating, especially being it's kind of a step behind almost, you said, kind of that mirroring is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the one of the big ones. The vestibular sense actually, it's one of our most regulatory senses, and the effects of the vestibular sense can last up to 6 hours. So yeah. So if you stimulate that one, it's a big bang for your buck. On the upside, when you mess it up, it's, you know, like that's where you get seasick or you have your sea legs and you can't quite get yourself back together. So sometimes I don't use that one as much just because it can be so overpowering. The sense that I probably lean into the most, if I had a personal heavy hitter, it would be like the vestibular sense is the heavy hitter of the body, you know, like it controls a lot of things. So that's why movement is such a big deal for occupational therapists. But the proprioceptive sense is truly, I believe, the calming sense. And those of your listeners that are not familiar with that, proprioception is how you know where you are in space. And the way you know how you are in space is, I like to tell people, if you've ever been to the Froyo or the frozen yogurt place, and you get those little fruit capsules, right? And they're like little beads. And when you bite on them, like they the juice comes out, right? It's like the frozen yogurt topping. And I like to tell kids that you've got those little beads inside all of the joints in your body and in your muscles as well. And so as you squeeze your muscles and you move your joints, that liquid pops out. And that's the neurochemical that kind of tells your body where it is. And so it's your ability to close your eyes and touch your nose. And so I always joke that when you're drunk, your proprioceptive sense leaves the building. You know, like you tumble around, you don't know where you are. But to know those, and some of our kids, they kind of look like that, right? When they're stumbling around and they're bumping.
I have one that was born that way. She runs pitched forward and she won't stop till she hits something.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. And so you can look at that and be like, oh, that's the proprioceptive sense. But when we facilitate the proprioceptive sense from the outside, it's also our connective sense. And so when you give someone a hug, that's that deep pressure. And deep pressure is not proprioception, but deep touch actually goes through the same pathways as proprioception. And so moving and running and jumping feel good, but also getting a squeeze by someone feels good. And not only do you have the neurology of going up the same more calming pathway, but you also have, there's another neuro principle called the gate control theory. And that means when you rub something, it overrides the pain response, and it might even actually produce endorphins. So that's why when you bump into something and somebody rubs your head or you hit your knee and you rub your knee, that is engaging that deep touch and proprioceptive sense to calm down that feeling. And so when I talk about this live, I give lots of, you know, what do you do that engages the proprioceptive sense that calms you down? You know, and think about what things bring you to midline, what things bend your joints and move you forward. And so people will say, you know, like they get a hug or going for a jog or swimming. I love scuba diving. And one of my favorite things is to be down under the water and feeling all that PSI on me. Like it's like a big squeeze from the ocean. And that's one of the reasons I really love it. And so I guess, so what are some things in your life, Julie May, that are proprioceptive, that calm you down?
I love wind. I love standing into the wind, like a really heavy wind, like because it does the same thing. It feels almost like deep pressure.
Yeah.
So if I am very dysregulated, I will roll down all the windows in the car because it kind of fills my ears with pressure.
Yeah.
And it puts that pressure on my body. And it's a quick resolve for me. So I'm driving on, especially on the highway, because it almost makes a vacuum in my ears.
Yeah.
And it's funny, when my youngest, who is a lot like me in sensory ways, when she was an infant and all the way up through like two and a half, three, the minute we roll down the windows, like on a road that we were driving over 30 miles an hour, within 3 minutes, she was sound asleep.
Wow.
She just needed the vacuum in her ears. And we were like, if we needed her to fall asleep for a nap and she was fighting it, I knew I just had to drive fast enough and roll down the windows and get that breeze on her, like a big breeze, not like a soft trickle. She wanted the wind and it would calm her. And it does every time still. Like, it's just, And that's why I love the ocean so much, because it's not like, I don't want a soft breeze. I want wind. I'd probably, if I didn't barf, I'd probably be a great, I don't have sea legs. I'd probably be a great boat captain because I love the wind. I just,
Oh, that's that's amazing. And yeah, I've never had anybody say wind before, but I love that. And I love how we're all different, you know, and that's what I want your listeners to really be encouraged, is to find out from the kids, you know, that you work with, like, what is their favorite thing? For some, it's chewing gum. For others, it's drinking out of a straw, because that's really, you know, that pulling is a very proprioceptive thing. And so I guess, you know, it, food is very proprioceptive.
Because, yes.
Yeah. You know, every one of your teeth, right? That's a joint. And so as you're chewing, you know, mastication and chewing is a very proprioceptive thing. For some, it's tapping. You know, there's tapping techniques where you can do that. Again, go into rhythmic and repetitive as well. Going into like hugging your knees is a good proprioceptive. Weighted blankets, Capable is the brand that I always use, Capable weighted blankets, because they're consistent. They're every 2 inches, right? And so you get that constant, consistent pressure. But it's that pressure of a weighted blanket, or even a hugging an animal. Those are great proprioceptive, because then they'll lay on you as well.
Yes.
Get that deep touch. And so even animal assisted, or just, you know, we do like kid sandwiches in the couch. So take 2 couch pillows and, you know, squish them between the couch pillows and be like, what kind of sandwich are you? And, you know, and you might say, what do you want on your sandwich? And they say, oh, lettuce. And so you might put a thin blanket between the couch cushions and be like, here's the lettuce. And then you kind of press down and you might say, do you want mayonnaise? And if they're, oh yeah, I want mayonnaise or ketchup or mustard or whatever. And then you kind of smooth it out, like you're smearing the mustard, or, you know, you're smearing the peanut butter. Like, you know, peanut butter might be sticky, you know, and, you know, so just really lean into the playful aspect as well.
Gosh, that's, whenever you can put play, you know me, that's my bread and butter. Put on that play. I love it.
And engage the imagination too, which brings in that frontal cortex that helps to calm the body as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love proprioception, and most kids, that's where I lean in to calm the most, is, you know, giving the hug, moving them forward, blowing out a candle, you know, even if it's an imaginary candle, blowing on your soup, you know, holding a pretend bowl of soup and blowing on that. And so just be mindful of what activities can I do that kind of create, in TBRI, one of the things they call it is the crash and bump. And I love that language, because it is just, how can we crash and bump? How can we play where, you know, maybe you're running into me, or maybe you need to fight it out. You know, maybe we need to have a big old pillow fight to get some of that out. And if it's rhythmic and repetitive, and if we can add that rhythm, maybe we play some Lady Gaga, or we play some Metallica, or we play some, I don't know, you know more music than I do, but something
I mean, really rhythmic. And also, like, using your own, one of my favorite things we did as kids when we would first come home from school, my brothers and I would take our t-shirts. Granted, t-shirts are a lot shorter these days, but they used to be longer, but you could take them and like put them for kids over their knees.
Yes.
And then they would have battles where they're like eggs, right? And they're trying to crack each other. And that way you don't really have arms that you're throwing, but you're almost like heaving, yeeting your body, as the teens would say, into each other, and you're like this little egg or trampoline time. And that's a great thing to like toss your body at each other in a way that you don't have like jabby parts. You're kind of all rounded. Yeah. But you're like trying to crack the egg.
And then one last thing I'll say before we move to the other senses is even a hoodie. You know, if you know it's going to be a rough day, and I will do this when I get on a plane, I am known, if it was a long week, I always wear a hoodie on the plane. And that is my signal to everybody around me of, really don't want to engage right now. Put my hoodie up, pull it tight, and then pull it tight. And then when I pull down on the hoodie, it's almost like it compresses every single vertebrae as it goes down, right? And it's just this delicious squeezing of my spinal cord. And it's that whole like, oh, I'm done working. You know, and I can change gears to go home and be mom instead of, you know, an employee or whatever. And so, you know, even just having a hoodie on can be something that is so simple and so easy. And also be mindful of that when your teenager comes in and puts their hoodie up and they're like, ah, they're not very verbal. Well, they're probably not in their frontal cortex to tell you all about their day, but they're processing it through by using the hoodie to kind of, you know, regulate themselves so that after they get that input, you can offer them a snack where they chew a little bit, do something crunchy, do something chewy, and then maybe they'll open up and tell you about their day. Maybe they won't. Depends on the kid.
Real quick, I do want to stop you for a second. I do like how you did touch on, too, as we're sharing about what works for kids, we're also sharing what works for us as adults.
Yes.
And I love that you're doing that because I think it is so important to remember our focus and our passion is for pediatric support because we both work primarily with kids, but with adults as well.
Right.
But adults get dysregulated too. For so sure. Just because we're saying this works for your kids, know that this will help you too. This will help your adult self. If you're having a day where you are just having a day and you're feeling you're on edge or you're feeling like you've had hard news or you have a big scan or a test coming up or something where you're just not feeling like you are online or right where you want to be, try these tools because they make a difference and they can really help your system so that you, because unfortunately, we don't get to stop being mom or dad or grandma or cousin. We still have to have our roles of everyday life in addition to battling chronic illness or supporting somebody who has chronic illness. And that's difficult.
And we think about too, chronic illness leads to chronic pain. I mean, illness is almost always pain. And the pain override is vibration and deep touch input. So get a weighted blanket, find some hand massager that you keep in the car, you know, and then just hold even an electric toothbrush. I know that sounds ridiculous, but just sometimes taking an electric toothbrush and just kind of holding it to your sternum will hit every single one of those proprioceptors. And it's that deep touch vibration. Again, those all, and I have a whole podcast on, you know, the neurology of this, but for this moment, I'm just going to say it goes to the pathway that calms you. And so that deep touch, vibration, and proprioception, those are kind of your neurological inways, right? Or your neurological buttons that you can push. And so if you're having chronic pain, you know, rubbing the temples of your head, squeezing your hands together, you know, just doing that mindful squeezing of your body will decrease the pain minimally. You know, sometimes pain is really severe and you need narcotics to button it out.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. You know, like no shame in that. And actually encouragement in that. But you know, if you need just a little bit more, it lead into that proprioception for yourself as well. Turn on the heater, in your car, you know, and we'll get, so that goes into, you know, the sense of touch, right? And so with touch, we've got temperature and touch. And actually, there's probably, I can't remember the exact number. I was reading the neurology book, and I think there's 8 different ways that we receive touch. So touch can be, you know, how deep something presses into your skin. It can be the stretch of your skin. It can be the pulling or shearing force of your skin. It can be light touch. It can be deep touch. It can be like grazing touch. And we have different neurons that receive the input from all of those different types of touch. So when we talk about the sense of touch, that's one of the reasons so many kids have what we call tactile defensiveness, right? Or they have, you know, differences in the way that they perceive touch because there's so many different ways to perceive touch. You know, it is a very complex thing. And even temperature goes in through the touch receptors. You know, to keep it simple, I would say warmth is the more calming of the temperatures. Sometimes when you are, like you were saying, that cold air, you know, feels good to you. And so sometimes when we are on kind of a low end of our, what we call the arousal zone, right? Or the alert zone. That cold air kind of picks you up and helps to get you back to where you need to be, right? And sometimes we can be so amped up, that's that whole matching the energy. And if I'm really, really amped up and someone comes in and says, hey, drink this nice warm cup of coffee, I'm going to spill it on them because we're like, no, you're not seeing how amped up I am. But if they, you know, give you something cold, then that cold is actually going to amp up with you and match you. And so you're going to feel homeostasis, if you will. And so sometimes we need cold to kind of bring us back into our own awareness and our moment, our mindfulness. Now, even though I say warm is the more calming temperature, sometimes cold can actually meet us and help us feel seen and known. I don't know if you ever watched, what was it, Sheldon and the Big Bang Theory?
And yes.
He was always like, hot beverage. <You know? laughs> that yes. was doing for someone that was hurting other than to bring them a hot beverage. And really, it is, it's so helpful, you know.
When it's so helpful.
It's like a cup of care, right? Like it really is. Or soup. Yes. Like we eat soup when we're sick. All these warm things that kind of help us feel good. And then also the thing with the sense of touch is usually consistency. Things that are soft and, you know, things that tend to be pointy or prickly, they're not a consistent feel on our tactile system. And so things that are going to be, you know, smoother and softer. And when I say soft, it's a, there's a rhythm and a pattern to it, because the Minky blankets are very soft, but as you run your hand across them, they're kind of bumpy, but it's a soft bumpy, but it's because the bumpiness is rhythmic. And it's kind of like a petting a dog. Like we have a doodle. Mm-hmm. She's a Bernedoodle, but she, her hair is very curly. And so as you're petting Daisy, it's like a bump, a bump, a bump, but it's so rhythmic that it can be very mesmerizing.
I always tell parents, and I know that Marty would back this 100%, look at your child. If they are fisted and their hands are very tight and in their fist and they're very upset,
yeah,
they're not going to open up their hands and run it through a dog's fur. They're not going to. You have to meet them where they're at. Their body is giving you cues as yes. to what they need.
And that cue, fisting your hands, is giving your body proprioception. So that kid needs to bang something. That kid needs to hit something. If their hands are fisting, the body is naturally going into proprioception. So lean into that sense with them. They need to drum. They need to strum. When that's a very clear sign that you need proprioception. I would say taste, sweet tastes are going to be more calming. But again, if you have someone who is upset about something, giving them something sour or something spicy actually feels good, because you feel met in that moment. That's matching the energy. So while most of the time I would say carby, sweet, buttery things typically engage our calming neurons, you know, and help the brain perceive things as safe. Sometimes when we don't feel safe at all, we want others to match and say, I see that you're not safe. And so we eat sour, we eat, you know, some of those more, you know, upregulating, like the Bean Boozleds and things like that. And then we feel matched, because it's like, wow, this food that I'm eating even feels kind of amped up, because my whole nervous system is really amped up.
Right. And if you're a May kid, you're going to want a pickle anyway, like a big, giant, sour State Fair pickle. That is your go-to comfort food. That is not normal, but that is what you want.
And so much of normal is dependent upon your upbringing and your heritage, right? And that's what I talk about that in the book as well. You know, my husband is always telling me, Marty, that's not normal. I'm like, really? Because that's how I grew up. Like, I feel, this feels very normal to me. And
feels comforting. Yes.
It feels comfortable. And so that's like, for example, you know, talking about your population, my father was a physician. And so one of my favorite comfort foods is hospital food. I love hospital food. Because I went and did call with him. Almost every Sunday, we would hang out in the doctor's lounge while he did call, and we ate at the cafeteria. And I love bland, nasty hospital food. It tastes amazing to me. And so some of the kids you're working with, like, they're going to like certain smells that are like, why do you like, that smells like, you know, cleaning product or whatever it is that they're growing up around.
It's so interesting. If you look at, and I'm sure we have a big following of child life specialists and nurses that listen to this podcast. And if you, maybe they're nodding their head, I would love to take a poll. I'd love to reach through whatever they're listening to and say, were you affected by illness? Because I guarantee 90% of them were as kids, because they were so comfortable in the medical world as small children, because of a ill parent or an ill sibling, or maybe themselves, that they have now gone into a profession where they do that for themselves because it felt like home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not because they didn't deal with their own stuff when they were a kid. It's because it felt familiar.
Yep.
And so all of you parents that are like, it will be so interesting for these children of these adults listening that have children, how many of them, we might be looking at the next generation of doctors and surgeons and physicians, because they're growing up around illness, and that's not hopefully going to be seen as scary to them. That's going to be seen as home, and that breeds beautiful doctors and incredible nurses and caretakers and empaths, and the world needs more of that. So,
yeah, the brain is constantly scanning for, is it safe? Is it not safe? Safe, not safe. And we're looking at you know, our memories are our predictors of, is it safe or not? And so depending on how much exposure you've had to something, it will feel safe to you. And, you know, that's a whole nother podcast.
It sure is. It is.
Like, and their poop and things like that, you know,
because I know.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah. That just leans into, and especially with your sensory system, things that are repeated in a relational sense, especially, become very comforting.
Exactly. So why we can't take away the illness part of it, right? Because we have no control over that. We can't take that away. We can make it to be where it's as safe as possible. And the parts that feel unsafe, we can plug in these tools of sensory to be able to help them regulate to where then it starts to feel safe again. And then through time, illness will be just a part of their story.
Yeah.
And a big part, sure, but it's just part of their life. It's their home.
You know, kind of on the other end, if it was a short-term thing, and it was a burst of sensory, especially the sense of smell. But the sense of smell goes straight into the amygdala, which is your memory center, and it's very highly emotional. A smell can be very triggering, either safe or not safe. And so if for some reason there is a smell that was not around long enough for the child to habituate or become desensitized to it, then that smell could be a very big trigger later in life as well. And so, you know, I use in my book, I use the example, I came up upon a fatal accident and there was radiator fluid spilling out. And it was a brief blip on my radar of my life, but it was an incredibly traumatic moment for me as I was trying to save this guy. And I didn't. I wasn't able to save him. He was not savable, but that smell overcame me as I was in a very traumatic moment. And so for me personally, anytime I even get a hint of radiator fluid, it just floods me back to that moment because, you know, what fires together, wires together. Like that's a deep memory for me. And so especially with smell, it's very dependent on our experiences and our memories around those experiences. And because the amygdala, it doesn't even get processed, you know, by the thalamus and the areas in our brain that actually help us make sense of things. It is such a quick triggered reaction. And that's why when you smell something, as it should be to keep you alive, you know, you smell smoke, you might be in the midst of an amazing conversation or amazing meal or a movie or anything. And you're like, what is that? Like you have to immediately figure out what it is. And that's because smell is just so primitive, really, in the way that we interpret and process it. So, but smells can be very calming as well. Even just smelling your coffee and, or, you know, as opposed to smelling your laundry, right? Even just having a cologne or a perfume of someone that you've lost. And that's why we don't want to wash their clothes. We want to keep their smell around because it's familiar to them and make a pillow out of it so that we can go to sleep with that smell. And so smell can be a comfort or it can be a trigger. And much of smell depends on what else was happening in the moment when you're smelling that. Sight, I would say outside is always best side. When you can get a kid outside, it actually restricts your pupils. And so when the pupils restrict, it sends an autonomic response to kind of calm the whole body down. So more light almost always calms the system just on a subconscious level. So there really is something to going and looking out a window or having natural light in the situation. It's a lot related to your pupils, as well as seeing the colors of the greens and the blues and the browns. Those are your calming colors, where yellows and reds and oranges are a little bit more on the alerting spectrum. And sound, again, we're leaning into rhythm and repetition and predictability. You know, songs that are rhythmic tend to be more calming. But some kids like it loud, some kids like it fast. You know, what really matters is what's the cadence of that. You know, using your voice as a therapeutic tool as well when you're talking to someone. And if you can be mindful of being rhythmic as someone shouting at you and then listening for their rhythm as well. If they're like, I hate you so much. You're like, ooh, that's very rhythmic. That person's trying to calm down. You know, you'd be like, ooh, that sounds really rough. You know, match that cadence back to them.
As somebody who worked a lot in high trauma situations, one of my favorite things that I do in the trauma room, when you come in through an ambulance in trauma, and it's a very high sensory you come in, you're in a trauma room, you have about 18 people around you. It's cold. They're going through their ABCs. So the physician's looking at your airway and your breathing and your circulation immediately. Mm-hmm. And normally child life specialists are right at the head of the bed. The first one who the kid kind of sees at eyesight when they come in, when they're right there, and they have to cut off clothing and look at the whole body, the doctors do, and the child life specialist is right in the ear. Mm-hmm. The reason we like to be there is so we can whisper and have a quiet voice. Because when there's all of this sensory happening, sometimes having something that's a little bit down, mm-hmm. maybe even a whole octave lower, yeah. it's easier for them to hone in on that than yeah. all the chaos that's happening way up above. So,
yeah. And the other thing too is a whisper is actually a somewhat alerting type
absolutely.
Of
thing.
Absolutely. Yes. So you're going to, your ear will physically draw to that whisper. And so, you can't hear everything at once, right? And so when someone's whispering at you, it is your body kind of goes, I need to pay attention to that. That's something that is cueing me to respond and to attend to that whisper. You do kind of block out the rest of the sensations because you become over-focused on like, what is this whispering? I need to make sense of this whispering, because we don't like things that don't make sense to us, which is why a lot of kids, you know, they work to gain control and they try and get control of the situation or things like that because they want it to be predictable.
What guidance do you have for families if it's a mom or dad going through illness, treatment, or something? They sometimes have other generations maybe move into their home for that season when they're actively in treatment. When we talk about thinking of our children and saying like, do you want cold milk or hot chocolate? Sometimes it's a gap. Everyone doesn't get individualized. You just give them what they need and then just have a day. That concept of, well, this isn't a restaurant, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
I feel like we've become much more aware of the importance of focusing on individualized needs and really catering in certain instances to that. What advice do you find for your families to help them be able to navigate that? Do you have phrases you say or ways that you empower your families to kind of navigate that? Because I know that that generational difference sometimes yeah, does come into play.
For sure. So, I mean, I believe it was Ross Green that talks about children do well when they can, you know, and just teaching them there's four. They're not behaving well. So do they feel safe? Do they have what they need? Do they know what to do? You know, and just really trying to help them kind of break that down. And with TBRI as well, we have trouble with the buy-in because people want to be punitive, right? They're like, I grew up just fine with this and this. And it's like, please just try it. You know, give me 1 week. Give me 1 week of doing it this way. And, you know, talk about the two things that we need are voice and choice. And even relating it to them about like, aren't there things you wish you could control for your daughter who's going through this? Like, don't you wish you had some control over this and this? And, you know, Johnny feels the same way. He's just looking for control and he can't control what's happening to his mom. He can't control all these things. So if we could just give him one little thing he can control, it's going to calm his nervous system. And I use the word nervous system a lot, you know, kind of go medical with them and say, you know, this is not a willful thing. This is a skillful thing. You know, and I love Maya Angelou. I lean into that a lot too. Hey, as we know better, we do better. And I can also lean into, I felt the same way. I completely mm-hmm. see where you're coming from because they want to be seen as well. And so sometimes relating to them, relate to reason to them. So I might bring them a warm beverage and say, hey, can we talk about how this went down, you know, here's some chewy carbs because I want you to talk to me. And I do. That's kind of what I do is I treat them that way. And then I point it out and I might say something, you know, for me, a really easy way, an easy one is I might say, okay, stretch your arms back. Like you're going to make a big yawn, you know, and then everybody kind of leans back. And I said, do you feel how activated your nervous system feels? Like just putting your body in that position really activated you. Now come forward and hug your knees. Oh man, you took an instinctive out breath. Like I heard you breathe, you know, that really calmed you down. That's my job is to study the body and how the nervous system is responding to what sensory input we give it. And based on my studies, I think you need to give that kid some ice cream. You know? And try to be silly too, because engagement and playfulness, we never outgrow playfulness. And even grandma needs to have some playfulness because again, if grandma's there, she's probably concerned about the same person that the little person is concerned about as well. But she feels like she's got to hold it together. And sometimes you and I are the ones that are like, you don't have to hold it together. And let's find some strategies for you to help your nervous system better too. And maybe we'll find something for this little.
Is there anything else you want to share or say to our families?
Just that you're not alone. And I think that that speaks volumes to know that there are people working that see you and hear you and love you and have made a career out of trying to help you, but also understanding that you know more about the situation than any of us will. But just because you're the expert on your own body and your own family, the experts in the field want to come alongside you and really help you. That's why we're all here, is just to help. And so I guess the last thing I would say is I hope that this podcast helps someone. And if nothing else, they can bring somebody a hot beverage like Sheldon. Mm-hmm. Like, man, I hope you feel better soon. And then maybe they can give him a hug. And yeah, we didn't even get into Lycra, but you know.
I know. Oh man, that's its own podcast. Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.